Lovely. Thank you very much indeed. For those of you on the phone, I'm Nick Clark, CEO of Central Asia Metals. I'm pleased to present now our final year results for 2015. Now, this is our fourth year of making a presentation, and just the disclaimer. I think the highlight that comes out of our results, of which, you know, Nigel, I and Howard are extremely proud of, is that we've maintained our dividend at 12.5p full year. So we're paying back a final dividend of 8p, which takes our total dividend payment for last year to over $20 million. Now, many of you know I was trailing a number of times with our interim results last year with our interim dividend payment, that we paid back over $60 million to shareholders, having raised $60 million 5 years previously. With this number, it takes us now to over $74 million we paid back to shareholders in little over 5 years of listing, and only 4 years of operations at our operating facility in Kazakhstan. Last year was our best record production year to date, notwithstanding an issue that we had, as you many of the analysts will recall, in terms of production middle of the year. We still were 8.5% up on the previous year at over 12,000 tons. Now, gross revenue is down nearly $9 million, and this is due in part to, obviously, the copper price. Well, not in part, it's entirely down to the copper price. So our gross revenue is $67 million. But our EBITDA, we've maintained our EBITDA margin at over 50%, so our EBITDA came in at $35 million. Interestingly, and note that our C1 cash cost is now 60 cents. Now, it's not, we just haven't lost 10 cents per pound on cash cost. We've changed the methodology of reporting it. Previously, we included some taxes in there, but to take our C1 onto a level that we can compare ourselves across the market, we're using the industry standard definition, and that takes us down to 60 cents per pound. If we'd have used the same methodology in previous years, we'd be about 67 cents per pound. So we've seen a massive saving in cash cost, and that keeps us very much in the lowest quartile of the cash cost curve. Our cash at the end of the year was $42 million, and as you will all know, we have no debt. Now, during the year last year, we delivered our Stage 1 expansion, which allowed us to increase capacity of the plant, and that results, obviously, in partly in our record production last year of over $12,000. This year, we've got a big capital program going on, and this is the last capital program that we have at Kounrad, and that will take us to enable us to extract copper from the western dumps. Now, that program is ongoing now. We've got our personnel on site. We've got our equipment on site. We've got fixed plant on site to enable us to deliver that. And that program will cost, we told the market, about $19.5 million through to the end of this year. And that will allow us to start extracting copper from the western dumps. Also, last year, we invested a further $3 million into Copper Bay, and that allows Copper Bay to go ahead with the financing of a full feasibility study that we're currently doing on the Chile project, and that will deliver its results in the last quarter of this year. Now, this year has started very positively. Q1 production, we announced the results last week. We're up over 36% on the previous year's period. And this is due primarily to the expansion, the Stage 1 expansion, which allowed us to produce more copper from our plant, but also because, as with a lot of other places in Europe, Kazakhstan actually had a very mild winter, so we didn't see the temperatures which we're normally used to in the January-February period, minus 20, minus 30 degrees centigrade, didn't really occur this year. I always put this one up, and I think it is a testament to how well the company has performed, both against the copper price, despite a falling copper price since we came into production. And you'll see that copper hit $10,000 just before we started production. When we came into production in 2012, the first sales we had were over $8,000 per ton. Nigel will take you through the numbers, but you see that we've had, since we started production in 2012, we've had a falling copper price. And in that period, our share price from the time we started production has been on a steady upward trend for a period, and now for the last year, 18 months, very much trading in a set range. And then when you compare us against the AIM Basic Resources since IPO, you can see if you put a pound into the AIM Basic Resources, you could pay for a, well, you wouldn't pay for anything, would you? But if you were to put it into us, you could at least afford probably a couple of Starbucks on £1 invested. You couldn't afford anything there, could you? And for those on the phone, I was pointing to the share price graph where the Basic Resources says you've lost about 80% of your money in the last 5 years if you've gone into the index. Our share price at close last week was £1.71. That gives us a market cap of £190 million. As I said, cash at 42. We haven't issued any more shares. So I think we've got a strong, robust set of numbers that has given us the confidence in going forward in production numbers that we were guiding for this year, and obviously operationally last year, and our cost base, we're confident with the level of the dividend that we're paying. With that, I'll hand over to Nigel.
Thanks, Nick, and good morning, everybody. Just move the next slide if you don't mind. Before I touch on some of the numbers in a little bit more detail, I suppose it's worthwhile just looking at the market conditions in which we operate, and it doesn't need me to stand up here and tell a room full of experts about the copper price over the past, 5 years since we IPO'd, and certainly over the past 12 months. But clearly the copper price has declined since we did the IPO, since we started production, and we're now at, you know, levels whereby they're at six, some even say 7 year lows basically, and we've been trading within a range of $4,500 to $5,000 per ton. But the positive side from our point of view is that even at those levels of copper prices, we can manage to survive, we can manage to make profits, as Nick said, and still pay dividends to shareholders, which shows that we've got a pretty robust business plan. The market consensus that we've got, I suppose, for 2016 is still below $5,000, and those are the numbers that we're using to actually predict our numbers for 2016 internally. And the long-term consensus, you know, which gives everybody hope for the future, is that in maybe 2-3 years, who knows what timing it'll be, copper is probably going to get back to the levels of about $3 per pound. Maybe not up to the levels we saw 5 years ago, but certainly up towards that level we're all hoping and praying for in many ways. But as I say, we've got a robust business plan and we can survive at these prices. One thing you're probably less aware of as analysts in the City of London is the currency devaluations in Kazakhstan. It actually devalued over the course of the year about 86% from late August in 2015 through to 31st December. Now, what you mustn't be fooled by is think that that's going to come through on the cost base. Yes, we have about 60% of our cost base in tenge. But despite the huge devaluation of the currency in a short period of time, the impact on last year's results is a little bit more muted. One, because there's only 3 or 4 months worth of that devaluation. And secondly, because what you are finding is that inflation is taking hold. The official rate from Halyk Bank is 13.6%. But anecdotally, and talking to staff and talking to people we work with in the Balkash region, we know that it's up at about 25-30% on certain items. So you don't quite get as big a benefit as maybe you would anticipate. But however, having said that, it's fair to say that we do get a benefit, and we estimate it's something in the region of maybe 10% in our cost base. And just to give you some practical examples, electricity, which we consume quite a lot of in the electro-winning house, obviously, something like 3,000 kilowatts per ton of copper actually physically produced, slightly more than that over the course of the year. That, a year ago, we were being charged 7.5 to 8 cents per kilowatt hour in dollar terms. It's now at about 4 cents per kilowatt hour. So we are seeing benefits from that. We are seeing benefits from staff costs, obviously, which are in tenge, but we as a company took what we believe to be the socially responsible position to actually increase salaries for our staff by 25% from the 1st of January. That sounds a huge salary increase, but when you consider what these guys are worth in terms of what they produce for us and the conditions they operate in, we feel that was the just and, you know, the right thing to do for our staff. And we also recompense them a little bit for the 4 months of devaluation where they suffer money in their back pocket for their families and everything. So that's the background we're operating in. copper price is obviously slightly negative for us, but the devaluation is slightly positive for us. And against that, these are the results that we've announced this morning. So the gross revenue, that's declined by around about $9 million, and that number just feeds all the way through the results. So we see big changes in EBITDA and profitability percentage-wise. If you were to strip out that kind of element we can't control, which is the copper price, you'll find that the numbers are reasonably comparable with 2014, given the benefits from devaluation and other things in terms of volume of production that we produced in 2015. So the sales volume has increased by 8%, but the average sales price has decreased by 21%, and that more or less mathematically feeds through to a 12% reduction in revenue terms. The average price that we got for our copper was close to $5,300 per tonne. In terms of costs, well, as Nick's mentioned already, we do control our cost base well. We have some favourable factors like devaluation, and I'll go on to touch on the actual unit cost, which is the key measure, in a minute, in terms of how we're now measuring it with the new methodology and what it was like against the historical way we used to measure it. Slight increase in admin expenses. There's a slight typo in the presentation, actually. It should be 10.9, as you can see on the screen there, which is about a 30% increase. That's about $3 million, $3.2 million. Most of that is increased costs in terms of Copper Bay, in terms of business development, share option charges, and a number of other factors which have just fed through into a slightly bigger business that we now manage. Foreign exchange, well, that's been huge, as I've already mentioned. The impacts on our numbers, though, on the P&L side is a $9 million forex gain, you'll see, compared to about $1.9 million in the previous year, where there was also another devaluation, but not quite as big. And the other area, which I'll touch on later, is on the balance sheet, where the numbers have been quite significant in terms of the reduction in the asset base, albeit that those assets still produce, you know, valuable copper revenues in US dollar terms. And as Nick's already mentioned, the EBITDA number, which we're, you know, really proud of and pleased of, is close to $35 million, which is over 52% margin. Just a quick chart to show where we've moved from and to on EBITDA terms. $47.3 million of EBITDA last year, down to 34.9. Two major moves on that. One is the reduction in the copper price in terms of what we sell, offset a bit by increased volumes, and then the higher administration expenses, as I've already mentioned. Okay, unit cost of production. As Nick's already said, this is not smoke and mirrors to make it look like we're slightly better than we are. It's just a change in methodology. You find companies like Kazakh Mits, they don't include MET in their C1 cash costs. We historically have done. We took the decision that when we report this year, we'll try and standardise it so it's more comparable with some of those companies. And this chart here is just meant to show you the 67 cents that would have been our C1 cash cost on a normal reporting basis that some of the analysts probably still have in their models and everything, to what we're now reporting this morning, which is 60 cents. The only real change in that is MET coming out, and in place of MET, and MET on a unit basis, as you can see here, is 15 cents. Local G&A. We employ staff, obviously, in the Balkhash area to manage the business for us, so we replace that into our C1 cash cost. That's only 8, so you get a 7 cents reduction, effectively. So it's just like for like. At a fully inclusive basis, it's still $1.58 in both methods, obviously. And that is a reduction from previous years from 165, and does include, just go back one quick minute now, inventory write-off. We had an incident, as most of you know, in the middle of last year, and that cost about 2 cents per pound in terms of the inventory that we wrote off. That's included in the 158. So from a comparative basis, what you're looking at is 165 coming down to 156 in terms of reduction on a fully inclusive basis. Just move on, Nick, if you don't mind. The actual unit costs themselves, standard pie chart that we show, really just gives you a bit more detail behind the costs. Our production costs year on year are fairly similar. I think in 2014 we had 38 cents per pound. By production I mean electricity, reagents, the staff costs and any on-site costs, and that's now at 40 cents. Where we have made other savings is in things like MET. Copper price comes down, your tax charge to the government comes down. We'd rather actually slightly pay more MET if you think about it, then the copper price would be higher. And on sales and distribution, we've also benefited there over the course of probably the past 2 or 3 years in terms of reducing the unit cost, taking the copper from our site where at the moment goes, which is Turkey, just by putting pressure on Traxys to improve the logistics chain. So other points to mention on there, number of staff has increased. 276 production staff we now employ. But in terms of actual tonnage of copper that we get out of those production staff, over the years that's gone from about 53 tonnes per annum to about 57 tonnes per annum. So you can see Howard and his team work the staff pretty hard in terms of the value we get from each member of staff out there. And then the other point to mention really is depreciation and amortisation. It's obviously non-cash, it doesn't affect our cash costs, but over the course of this year we've benefited because of the devaluation and the asset base, and I'll come on to talk about that in a minute, has declined, so we've got a benefit of probably just over $1 million in reduced depreciation and amortisation. And yet moving forward we've also changed our accounting policy in line with agreement with PwC to actually extend it to the life of mine out to 2034 for a number of the assets. And that, as a knock-on effect over the course of the years, will be about $4 million reduction in the depreciation charge. Just a quick look at the cash flow. We started the year with $46 million in the bank, and we ended with $42 million. Key areas where that money was spent was in CapEx, income tax charge, and over the life of operating the Kounrad out there, we've now paid $68 million to the Kazakh government in taxes, which is a big number, and $20 million back to shareholders. The rest is money generated from the operations, as you can see. So paying it back to the government, paying it back to shareholders, and actually increasing the size of our operations and the efficiency of our operations out there. You can see where we sit on the industry cash cost curve, which is obviously which makes us, or gives us the ability, should I say, to pay the dividend that we're announcing this morning of 8p per share, right down in the lowest quartile there. Okay, the balance sheet impacts. Not that exciting, but actually this year fairly exciting from an accountant's point of view. Our asset base has gone from effectively PPE and intangibles to $156 million of assets that we employ out there. And I often get asked the question by my other board, people on the board of directors, say, how can it be that just through devaluation your actual asset base is almost half, which it has, and we're still generating copper at the same, not the same value because the copper price has come down, but those assets are still as valuable to us. These are just the book values. But the impact of the devaluation, which went from 185 down to 340 at the period reporting dates, which is an 85% reduction, as I said before, it's actually wipe out $77 million of assets on the balance sheet. So all balance sheet movements, it goes off the balance sheet and goes through the comprehensive income statements. Doesn't affect the P&L, and as I mentioned before, the only impact on the P&L is what you call transactional gains and losses from holding US dollar working capital balances, etc. And that was about $9 million. But this is a far bigger number, but I would argue less important from an analyst point of view. The stage one expansion we completed under budget, $2.5 million, that's now in the balance sheet. And on the working capital, we now hold a lot of working capital, but one success we did have in the year, which in some ways, I suppose, surprised us a little bit, was that we actually managed to recover some VAT off the Kazakh government. I've probably banged on about this for maybe 2-3 years, I don't know. But during the course of the year, in working with PwC and the American Chamber of Commerce, we actually managed to get $1.7 million back. We still owe $2.8 million historic VAT, and we're still working with PwC and the American Chamber of Commerce to get it back. Last thing on equity, we did a capital reduction scheme last year to enable us carry on paying the dividends. In terms to shareholders, well, this is a great chart. What we've shown there is the dividend increasing in terms of cumulative sense year on year to the point whereby now, since the IPO, as Nick's mentioned, we've returned close to $74 million to shareholders. And overall, as a percentage of the gross revenue, on a cumulative basis, that works out at about 31%. Which is a number that, you know, both myself and the whole team, Nick and Howard, we're extremely proud of. Moving on, Nick. Last slide from me before I hand over to Nick. We might not be the biggest growth story in commodities. In fact, there's not a lot of growth stories out there in commodities at the moment. But I think what this shows is that we're pretty reliable, pretty consistent in terms of unit cost of production and profitability. And as a consequence, it enables us to pay attractive dividends, as you can see, $74 million. Pay money back to the government, and also enables us to maintain a pretty robust business plan moving forward in what are pretty difficult economic times for the commodities market. I think on that, Nick, if I just hand over you to expand a bit on the technical.
Thank you, Nigel. As you can see, robust numbers, financial numbers, have to be backed up by the technicals. Howard is with us today, and we'll
we'll discuss more on Howard a bit later. And so if anybody has any specific technical questions, please feel free afterwards to please approach Howard and ask him anything you want. The graph here shows, you know, the production, quarterly production. And as we've always said, you know, quarterly production is very cyclical. Cold weather in the winter, reduced output, and that's shown, or that's seen by the graph on page 16. But you can see an increasing output. We've now produced at the end of Q1 over 43,000 tons of copper from this project, just over 40,000 at the end of 2015. And you can see the most recent quarter one has been the highest output in a Q1 of any period, due in two parts to more boiler capacity and expansion to the plant. Obviously, in the middle of the year in 2015, we had a production incident. We recovered it quickly, and by August, it was fully recovered. But it did impact some output in Q3. But then in Q4, when things have got right, you'll see we had record production, helped by lower winter temperatures and higher flow rates and grades. Now, in 2016, we've had the best start to the year we've had. Let's not get ourselves carried away. We're still guiding between 13 and 14,000 tons of copper. That's another 12% increase on last year's production. And we're hopeful we'll get it, and that's why we give a production forecast that we think we'll get. Now, many of you will be familiar with this table, and all it's doing really is just showing how consistent we've been in terms of copper output, but you'll see that the flow rate that we're getting from our plant has year-on-year increased down to the additional capital program we've had. That's compensated by a lowering of the PLS grade, but obviously the area that we leach under has increased, and I'll show a bit more about that on the next slide. Again, you've seen these graphs. The area we have leached and we're about to leach in the years going forward on the eastern dumps. Our recoveries graph on the right-hand side on page 18 shows that we've reached 90% recovery in certain dumps on the east. And you can see the line of all the recovery and all the dumps show slight variations, and I'll come on to that in a minute. But nonetheless, we can see a steady recovery, no flattening off in overall recovery, and it's how we manage the dumps and how our team on site manage the dumps. And so you'll see on the table in the bottom of page 18, you'll see how much copper at the end of the year we'd extracted, over 40,000 tons. We're now well over 43,000 tons as I speak now. And you can see what copper is yet to come. And of course, there is always copper left in the eastern dumps. After we've recovered all the copper that we can in the leaching, there will be copper left. And that's important, and you'll see why in a minute. I think we said that half-year results, we actually showed a leach recovery curve. Having operated now for nearly 4 years, we have got, rather than just empirical data and test work data, when we did the original design for the plant and the dumps, we were looking at a design recovery of a period of about 180 days to get the target recovery of copper from any dump. Now, we say cumulative recovery 100%. Oxide, we get 50-51% recovery. Right down to sulfidic material, we may get 41-42% recovery. But you can see each of the dumps has a slightly different curve with it. So you can see that the average now we're expecting is about 240 days. But we have compensated for that by the flexibility that the plant allows us in terms of raising or lowering the flow rate treated through the plant to ensure that we get the same copper output. So these rest and leach periods help us to extract the maximum copper from any dump. So 4 years of operation now has given us a lot of data that we can better manage and monitor how a dump, a particular area, gives up its copper. And so we better monitor and control the dump kinetics. And that this is really important to how we plan our operations going forward. Now, remember I said in the last slide, we had about 87,000 tons of copper, residual copper in the eastern dumps. We've identified there's a potential for what we call an intermediate leach system to further recover copper from the east. When we go to the west, there is the we will be trialing an intermediate system where we put raffinate before it goes over the west through the eastern dumps to pick up some copper before it gets pumped over to the west. And if we can pick up, say, 0.8 of a gram, 1 gram of copper into solution here before it goes to the west, that means we've recovered more copper from the eastern dumps than we'd originally planned for. Now, how do we maintain this copper production? As I said, we've increased the area under leach. And this graph here shows that the blue solid graph shows the total material under leach average per year. So we've gone from 2012 we had about just under 10 million tons under leach. We've gone up to 58 million tons under leach on average in a year. So the area that we leach has gone up, but not as much as the tonnage because the dumps have got bigger on us. So for any set area, we're actually leaching more ground. And the grade has dropped quite considerably, almost halved in some instances. But the annual copper has increased. Now, this just shows you how we are managing the kinetics of the dump to ensure that we get the annual copper we want and we get maximum recovery of copper from any one of the dumps. Which brings us to the Western Dumps expansion, Stage 2 expansion. We got state approval late last year. We'd actually jumped the gun. We'd ordered a lot of equipment. So the capital program that we have announced to the market was about $19.5 million. We actually ordered and pre-ordered a lot of equipment, and that's arriving on site. It's either on site or due to arrive in the next weeks or months. Our team, capital construction team, are on site. And the diagram we have on page 21 shows the pipeline and power line that goes from our existing copper plant to the western dumps, and that is the construction program that will start imminently towards the end of April, and look for functional completion of the capital works towards the end of this year, ready for leaching middle of next year. In addition, we've added a new water pipeline, which this blue dotted line, which you can see heading off to the south. Now that's a water pipeline that's 22 kilometers long that'll go from our plant all the way to Lake Balkhash, and that will ensure that we get good processed water supply going forward. Currently we get water from an old mine shaft about 8 kilometers north of the current operations, but for longevity and to take the project through into the western dumps and to provide long-term water supply through into 2030, then we've installed this pipeline system, 22 kilometers, and extraction pump house on the lakeshore edge, and that will allow us to pump at about 200 cubic meters per hour when we need it. Obviously, we put a lot of store by the social and environmental responsibility issues that the operations have. We operate in the community. We spend a lot of time, management time, on health and safety issues on site. We have a risk management committee that we've established to identify risks both to the operations and to personnel. Regrettably, last year we had 2 lost time injuries, which was something that we were most distressed about. But we put a lot of effort in to make sure that injuries don't happen to our personnel. We have what's called a lost time injury frequency rate of about 1.5 in 4 years of operation. So over 1 million hours of work done. We've only had 1.5 incidents in those 1 million hours. But it's not something that we sit back and say, well, you know, we're not bad. We always strive to have 0 accidents. So we're very strong in our local workforce and the community in which they operate, and we've spent out over $1 million in the period we've been operating on local community projects. We've paid $68 million, as Nigel said, in local taxes to the state government, in addition to nearly $1 million to local good causes. And almost entirely our workforce is employed locally. We don't have a great many of expatriates. In fact, we have one expatriate on site. So we are very much operated by local people. And we included that picture there to show the celebrations of the Kazakh New Year, Naraz. And, you know, this is the sort of thing that we, you know, as a company, we provide the food, we provide the yurt in which the celebrations occur. And a number of these people are actually veterans from the Great Patriotic War, which is Second World War to us, but in Soviet times, this was the great battles they have, and their veterans are highly revered in the community. So that's what we do at Kunrad. I think we do run a very tight ship. Costs are controlled, and we do an extremely, I think, a thorough job of managing our local environment. Going forward, where's our growth? Now, Copper Bay, you'll be aware that last year we put another $3 million into Copper Bay to take our ownership to 75%. We are now well into our definitive feasibility study of the project. That'll be coming out in Q4 of this year. We've got Gavin Farrar here today. He is managing this process with the team from Copper Bay in looking at how we can optimize and maintain the project in a positive light, given the low copper prices we've seen. Now, when we did the study, I think we came up with a C1 cash cost of about $1.34 for this project at the preliminary level. We would look at the definitive level to have a more robust number there, obviously. But below that $1.34 is where we're aiming for. And certainly on the capital number, we've got to get down. And that's very much the ethos, the management ethos that we have as a company, to keep things in-house and as low as possible. So that is progressing well, and that'll come out latter part of this year. So we look at business development. We've spoken about this over the last 2 years. We have an extremely active business development opportunity. I was going to say department, and we do have a department. It's run by Gavin, and we have people in Kazakhstan, we have people in South America that work with us and looking and grading opportunities. We have looked at over 100 opportunities, about 125, 130 currently. Now, we haven't done anything. Does that mean there's nothing worthwhile out there? What it means is there's nothing that necessarily fits with us and the ethos in the current climate. It doesn't mean to say that we won't do something in the future. Very much we are looking at other things to do. I think our area of focus has come down to Kazakhstan. We have a very active department, people looking for us in Kazakhstan. We're comfortable there. But also Latin America is an area that which with Copper Bay and building around the team that we inherited with that also is an area that we're looking at. However, we're not if a great asset comes in wherever, we will always look at it with open eyes. But it must conform to the sort of operating ethics that we have enjoyed and look to make returns to shareholders without taking too much money. Then we come to the board of directors. You'll see in the press release that we've announced there's been certain changes announced. And really, there isn't an awful lot to be too concerned about. I know some people may say, why are you doing it? Hurst Brown is stepping down to deputy chairman. I am stepping up to executive chairman. Howard, who is with us today, and many of you will know Howard and spoken to Howard over the years on the technicals, is very much staying with the company. But for personal reasons, Howard has decided he doesn't want to be on the board of directors, but absolutely he is A1 top member of the team, and he will be very much still in control, in charge at Kunrad, and looking at other opportunities as we go forward. But he'll be doing it as an employee. albeit the most senior employee one could expect to have. With Howard coming off the board, we've taken the decision that Gavin, who many of you will be aware, will join the board as an executive director. And so if you look at the lineup there, everybody else remains the same, and you all know Roger Davey, chairman of Atalaya. He worked with Rothschilds for 17 years or something as a mining analyst there. So it's a good, strong team with lots of experience, and all we're looking to do is maintain that that management experience by me moving up. And it's just looking to the future, looking to provide a stable, technically competent board. So I've nearly taken up, well, not nearly, I have taken up too much of your time. I think, look, our EBITDA margins are over 50%. Our cash costs are in the lowest quartile. Strong balance sheet, no debt. Dividend policy, that is the most important thing that's kept us buoyant, kept our stock price very strong in a market that's been badly hit by commodity price turnaround and uncertainty over the Chinese market. But all of our capital programs are financed internally from existing cash flow. After this year, when we have a $19.5 million capital program for stage one, next year we don't have any major capital program other than sustaining CapEx. So you can see that one of the reasons that the board has decided to give a very, very strong message out to the marketplace about the 8p final dividend, making $20 million return this year, is because we are comfortable about where we're going to be in the production cycle in terms of the quantum. Copper price we can't do too much about, but next year we're looking at more free cash coming back to us because of a dropping capital program. And that's it. That's our presentation. I hope I haven't taken up too much of your time. So, Richard. I don't know how you want to deal with the people on the call.
Let's open it to the floor first and then
Move on to the call. Are there any questions to myself, Nigel, or Howard on anything? Yes, Nick.
Can you just elaborate a little bit on that intermediate stage of leaching that suggests on the west? Is that all the raffinate that goes to the east will then go to the west, or will there still be effectively two?
I think, to be honest, that's still in discussion. Howard, would you want to comment on that?
It could be done actually by a number of options. We could have an intermediate leach stage fully at the eastern area and bringing in a lower volume of solution whilst maximising flow across to the west. Or we could put solution onto the east and then take it across to the west and then bring it back. The point that we're making is that as we've been running, we've never really dropped much below a gram per litre coming out of the dumps. And we know that with our operating costs, we could take that down to 0.6 of a litre, probably quite comfortably. That 0.6 of a litre wouldn't give us the copper that we need on an annual basis. So it's just a methodology of trying to get that extra few percentage out of the east and bringing it back through the plant. So it's a good opportunity for us.
Martin, yeah.
Yeah, just thinking ahead slightly, with Copper Bay, you're going to get the feasibility study finished at the end of this year. If that's a positive decision and the initial numbers say it probably will be, what would be the timetable for that? I presume you'd be into financing and building 2017. How would you finance it?
Well, I mean, that's a good point. I don't think we've got any specific methodology for financing it currently. I think we'll wait till the second half of this year to see how the market is. But we have, look, there's a number of means of financing these things, not just in that, the conventional debt route. And I think we would look at all other routes to financing it. But I don't think we would be looking to do anything that would adversely impact on our dividend policy. The company's dividend policy is almost sacrosanct. You can never say never. But it's something that the board takes very seriously before we would alter it.
Richard?
Christian?
Back in January, I think you suggested 2016 cash cost guidance would be in line with 2015 performance. Is that still the case? Is that still your position?
I think in broad brush terms, yeah, I think it's fair to say, Richard. I mean, as I said before, we are benefiting from devaluation. I think it's one of those things you get slapped on the wrist by the NOMAD if you put too much detail about projecting costs. But certainly we see, as I mentioned before, things like electricity costs, things like actual dollars paid per person employed in the business because of the devaluation, that's benefiting us. So we're confident we can maintain where we currently are, yeah. So I think that's fair to say.
Nick. Given the 20% minimum payout ratio now, and pay way beyond that, 30%, if the copper price rises, can you see yourself managing that down towards the sort of 20% to maintain a more staged dividend increase, or can we see a blowout?
Look, I'd love to have that problem to decide what level we pay out. I think as much as anything, it's a quantum. 30% is one would argue racy, but it's driven as much by the low copper price. And I know that sounds reverse logic, but the other caveat we have is that we have 3x cash cover in the company. So whenever we make a dividend, we make a decision on the dividend. There's a quantum. In this instance, this most recent dividend is 12.5 million dollars,
yeah,
is it?
And it's covered by about 3.1x.
And it's covered by 3x cash. That's a self-generated rule, as it were. We could drop that, or we could increase it, but it has to just make sense. The quantum of the dividend payment, the cash we have left in the company, and the capital program we've got going forward. So I wouldn't. I don't think there's any intention to drop or to raise. If we haven't got any more questions from the room, is there any questions from the telephone lines?
Ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone keypad now. To withdraw, please press *2, and please ensure your phone is unmuted locally. As a reminder, that's *1 to ask a question now. We have no questions registered on the phone lines.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. If there are no more questions, then thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for turning up, and we'll see you all again at the interim.